House General Government Committee. Welcome, everyone, and welcome our new member, Mr. Representative Bradway. We're happy you're here today.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for coming, and thank you to all of you. At this time, I'd like to open a public hearing on House Bill 2154 and ask our committee administrator to give us a brief. I've got to have a little sip of coffee.
Cheers.
HB 2154 enables the governor to assign county, city, and special district resources across jurisdictional lines if needed to respond to collapse or threat of collapse of structures. It authorizes the state fire marshal or designee to manage resources made available by the governor. It gives all communities access to specially trained and equipped structural collapse responders to supplement local resources.
Thank you. We have some testimony here today, and I'd like to invite State Fire Marshal Nancy Orr to come forward, and any who are sort of with her can join her at the table.
Chair Berger, members of the committee, I'm Nancy Orr, State Fire Marshal. With me today is Bob Garrison, who's recently retired State Fire Marshal, and John McDonald from Springfield Fire Department, who's a member of the Governance Board for the Urban Search and Rescue Team. This bill was introduced by the governor on behalf of the State Fire Marshal and the Oregon Fire Service. The Oregon Fire Service, with leadership from Mr. Garrison, have been working for 3 years to develop an urban search and rescue team that can respond to communities around Oregon in case of a structural collapse, from earthquake, tsunami, domestic or foreign terrorist attack, or any other cause. I'm going to let Mr. Garrison speak more about the development of that urban search and rescue capability. But without this legislation, that team that has come together can respond only among the communities of the team members who have a mutual aid agreement, nine fire departments. And we need this legislation to be able to respond to this new resource that Oregon has statewide.
Mr. Garrison.
Thank you, Chair Berger, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Robert Garrison, and I now serve as a citizen advisor to the Urban Search and Rescue Task Force. This task force came in recognition of what has been a long-standing threat of earthquake in this state. We know from the experts that when a large earthquake occurs, as is predicted, a lot of our older buildings are going to collapse. They're going to be, as it's described, in the street, and we're going to have a lot of trapped victims. There are a number of fire departments around the state, mostly the major fire departments, who have developed some limited and in some cases some fairly well-developed urban search and rescue teams, but we know that they'll be quickly overwhelmed by any kind of a major event. They can handle some. They can't handle a lot. They're going to need help. Following the events of September 11, 2001, we recognized that we not only had an earthquake problem, but we also have a terrorist problem. We saw this with the Murrah Federal Building in Oklahoma City a few years ago, and again with September 11, we've seen it in other countries where U.S. embassies have been attacked and buildings have collapsed as a result of explosive devices. So we recognize there's a need for this ability. Working with the Oregon Fire Chiefs Association immediately after the September 11th event, we decided that there was a need for an intermediate urban search and rescue task force capability in the state. There are 28 federal USAR teams, none of them in Oregon. There's one in Salt Lake City, there's one up in the Puget Sound, there's one in Sacramento. In talking with the federal teams, we know that in order for them to be notified, mobilized, respond, get set up, and actually be working, they're going to lose about 30 to 36 hours. And that's 30 or 36 hours where the local fire service is going to be absolutely overwhelmed and under-equipped. And recognizing that, we organized the task force under an ORS 190 agreement. And it includes, of course, the Office of State Fire Marshal through the State Police, the Oregon Department of Transportation, who has significant resources and also significant risk to be dealt with, Oregon Emergency Management, the Oregon Sheriff's Association, and those fire departments that had some ability to participate in this. And as the State Fire Marshal has mentioned, there are presently 9 of them. Signing up with an ORS 190 agreement, we formed a task force, and then we began looking for money for equipment. It's very specialized, very expensive equipment. We were able to get some federal Homeland Security grants. We now have 3 identical equipment caches established. They're ready to be deployed. In fact, tomorrow there'll be a media event in Tualatin. Those trailers are set up and ready to go. We'll be deploying those around the state to strategic locations. So we have the equipment available to the governor, and we have, under mutual aid agreements, we have some trained responders available, but only into those areas that are serviced by the mutual aid participants in the task force, essentially those 9 fire departments. There's lots of other places in the state that can't participate in the task force in the mutual aid agreement that are also at risk. In the spring break quake, back in 93, we saw damage to the high school in Mount Angel that very nearly became a collapse situation. That same, I believe it was the same earthquake, but it was in that same time frame we saw damage to the Klamath County courthouse that had to be replaced, very nearly collapsed. So we have places in the state that need these services. The governor, through the state fire marshal, has the equipment available. But outside those mutual aid agreements, we can't send the trained responders. We have over 200 trained technical rescue personnel available right now. We're continuing to seek grant money for more training for them. But as it presently stands, we're limited on where we can send them. So the purpose of this bill, as the state fire marshal has mentioned, is to give the governor the authority when an event like that occurs anywhere in the state to send not only one or more of these equipment caches, but also the trained responders that can use that equipment and be rescuing victims. If it were an event large enough to be a federally declared disaster, after 30 to 36 hours, some time period, we probably would have a federal team in and we could transition the effort off to them. Certainly these local responders would remain there to participate with the federal team, but it would become a federal responsibility. If it were an event that did not rise to the level of federal declaration, at least we've got people there immediately providing technical rescue services and critical life-saving services.
Thank you.
Chair Berger and committee members, thank you for letting me to speak today. I'm John McDowell with Springfield Fire Department. I'm head of their technical rescue team. And I just want to speak briefly about what it takes to perform these type of rescues. They're very technical in nature. They involve specialized equipment, specialized training. As Mr. Garrison has noted, there's already 200 responders in the state of Oregon that have received the same training basically that the federal USAR teams would have as far as this rescue goes. The nature of the fire service is to respond when called, and if this was to occur now without this team in place, I'm sure that the fire service would respond, but they would not be trained, they would not be equipped, there would be the possibility of injury and death to responders going into this type of situation. It's going to occur anyways, so the team is already, so to speak, formed and the training is in place. Excuse me, I lost my train of thought here. I'm sorry, I can't remember what I was going to say. And so there is a great tool, a great capability that exists right now, but again, that can only be used among the signers of the agreement. It can't be sent out statewide, so we're seeking for the governor to be able to provide that capability. Oh, I remember what I was going to say. In these types of situations, the probability of survival for a trapped victim in the first 24 hours is approximately 85%. Once you go past that time period, it drops about 30%. So what we're talking about is having trained people that can respond in that early, the early phases of that to provide the most, the best possibility of survival for victims. After that, if we have to wait for federal teams, the probability of survival goes way down. So this is a valuable tool for the citizens of Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you.
Just in closing, I also have a letter here from the City of Portland with their support for this bill.
Thank you. If you turn it into our committee administrator. Members of the panel, do you have questions of these folks? We have further testimony.
Chair Berger, I have just one comment I'd like to make. Mr. Garrison, respectfully, the high school in question in the spring break quake was Malala High School.
Oh, thank you.
And I happened to be on the city council at the time, and we were very, very concerned about the safety of the children. Fortunately, none of whom were present at the time. It resulted in the complete removal and rebuilding of Malala High School. But you're quite right that the damage was very severe and could have been disastrous.
Thank you. I stand corrected.
Questions? Could you take a moment and explain how it works under current agreements and how it would work under this one if, say, the disaster were in Florence and Portland firefighters came down? Who pays? Does Portland then pay for those firefighters' work down there? How does the money work?
In a current situation, there wouldn't be authority for the city of Portland and other members of the team to go down to Florence. We do have a cache of state equipment, and we would try to put together some sort of response. But the teams are training in what we call squads and task forces, so that they're going down with skilled people in different positions to meet all the needs of the search and rescue. Under the bill, the change in legislation, squads from any of the departments that are trained would be able to respond to Florence. We would probably respond the closest, which would be from the Eugene-Springfield area. The expenses then for the responding agencies would be reimbursed by the state. And this is done with the Conflagration Act, which is the model for the USAR bill as well. And so the expenses are reimbursed to the cities, and a request is made to the emergency board for that funding.
Is that the way it currently functions under?
That's the way it currently.
You said there are some groups that already are working together, 9 fire departments.
Right.
And that's how the funding works on those?
If the 9 fire departments responded among each other, let's say there was a major event in Portland and the other departments from Springfield, Salem, Eugene, Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue, Gresham, all came to Portland to give aid, there would be no reimbursement either way because it's a mutual aid agreement. So mutual aid means you're giving aid back and forth. But Florence doesn't have the resources to sign on to the mutual aid agreement. They have no resources to provide for urban search and rescue. So the only way to provide aid to that community would be through the legislation.
So in other words, we can all, in an earlier era, I think these things would have seemed far away, but they don't after watching what happened, the tsunami and seeing an earthquake and 9/11. We're all very aware that buildings collapse and emergency responders are needed right away, and this notion of trained ones is a wonderful idea, ready to go. Then the question becomes, what you're basically saying is they respond, they do their work, and then they send the bill to the emergency board, and the emergency board pays, essentially.
That's essentially what happens. What we do with the conflagration fires is get FEMA declarations that reimburses approximately 75%, 70 to 75% of the costs. So the total cost is for the state is significantly less.
Well, if you're in the building, you don't care who pays. I can guarantee you, but this needs to be part of the record.
Certainly.
Further questions? Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I'd ask you to stick around in case there are further questions. And Bob Livingston and Ken Armstrong. Oops.
Yeah. Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Bob Livingston, representing the Oregon State Firefighters Council. And this probably won't be the only time that you see labor and management come together on a bill, but there may be times where we don't. I come to you today to lend the support of the Oregon State Firefighters for House Bill 2154. I think I'd like to echo some of the comments that some of the previous speakers noted with a little bit different twist. One of the things that's important about this bill is that recognizing structural collapse, as my colleague Mr. McDowell noted, what it is referred to as something that is low frequency but high risk, meaning that it doesn't happen every day, but when it does happen, you need specially trained individuals to do that, not only to protect the lives of firefighters, but certainly to be effective and try to make sure that we can effectuate a good, sound rescue of a live person. And so I think one of the things that's good about this bill is, as Fire Marshal Orr has noted, is that I think this is what's good about government. We've already recognized that local governments as well as the state need to work together, and I think that's what the taxpayers are asking you as legislators and all of us that are in government to do, and I think that this bill shows that in working together and some of the hard work that Mr. Garrison and others have put together over 3 years of culmination, that this is what's good about government, where everyone can come together and do something that's good for all citizens of Oregon. And would hope that you would support the bill. And with that, I'd take any questions.
Questions of Mr. Livingston? Ken?
Madam Chair, members, Ken Armstrong, representing the Oregon Fire Chiefs Association, Oregon Volunteer Firefighters, and also Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue. Similarly, want to lend our support. This is an issue that's been of high priority for the fire chiefs and my other clients. Last session we worked on this. We've got a good product, I think, this session. You've heard the detail on the issue. I won't go over that. I do have, in case there are any other technical questions, Alec Jensen from Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue with me. This is an issue that has been through the Joint Fire Service Legislative Committee, which essentially is members of all the public safety on the fire side interest groups to sit down and process in legislative session the various issues that are coming up, and this is one that everybody has raised their hand and said, yes, this is a good bill, so we're certainly encouraging the committee to move it forward. Thanks.
Questions? Thank you both.
Thank you.
And I see that Genoa Ingram, and I apologize. A piece of paper got your name out of order, and so please come forward.
No apology necessary, Chair Berger. I just wanted to talk briefly before we make the statement about the bill. I'm Genoa Ingram with the Oregon Fire District Directors Association. The fire district directors and the chiefs trade off every legislative session staffing the Joint Fire Service Legislative Committee. That committee consists of emergency management technicians, fire district representatives from the Fire District Directors Association, the chiefs, the 9/11 managers, and others in the public safety field. We looked at both bills, House Bill 2154 and 2155, and without hesitation or reservation, the entire committee agreed to support both bills. As I was sitting here listening to the testimony, I hadn't planned to talk about this, but it was something that came to mind while I was listening. I arrived in San Francisco several days after the San Francisco earthquake back in October of 89, and I recall vividly the last survivor that was found there. His name was Buck Helms, and because they were not able to find him quickly, he ended up losing his life because of dehydration and the results of being trapped under the rubble for 5 days. I don't know what kind of system they had in San Francisco at that time, but I would hope that Oregon would do everything that we can possibly do so that if a tragedy of this nature happens in Oregon, that we'll be able to get to our citizens as quickly as possible. I thank you in advance for your support.
Questions? Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Is there anyone else that wants to talk on this bill? Okay, I am going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2154 and open a public hearing on a related bill, 2155. And we have some of the same players coming forward. So why don't we put you all up here at the same time? State Fire Marshal Nancy Orr, Robert Garrison, and Jenna, you're on this list too. Why don't you all three come up and... So you don't have to go back and forth so many times. And we'll take them in that order. Our State Fire Marshal, our former State Fire Marshal. Thank you.
Thank you. Chair Berger, members of the committee, I'm Nancy Orr, State Fire Marshal. House Bill 2155, again, was introduced by the governor on behalf of the State Fire Marshal and the Oregon Fire Service. It expands existing legislation called the Oregon Conflagration Act. And in this expansion, proposes to provide for good neighbor kind of responses. I guess you call it the best and the worst example of this is the incident in Coos Bay in November 2002, when three firefighters were killed in a commercial fire. And in order to give the fire department staff, both volunteers and paid, time to grieve and plan and attend the memorial services, resources came from all over the state to staff their stations for them. It's the sort of thing the fire service does. In this case, there was really no authorization under existing law, and still isn't today, to allow them to do this. So they were operating outside the scope of their authority, but they did it anyway. And so we've been discussing that ever since, and this amendment to the Oregon Conflagration Act would provide for that kind of coverage. It also contains language that would allow the governor to send resources in a more preemptive, proactive response to major fires. Currently, under the Conflagration Act, the fire must be threatening a significant number of structures, must be imminently threatening a significant number of structures for the governor to enact the Conflagration Act. We had an incident when the Biscuit Fire was burning on the west side over against the coast where the Jetco River Valley, excuse me, and all the people who lived in that valley clear down to Brookings were at risk of the fire coming down the Jetco drainage with the easterly winds in the fall. And they were totally unprepared for that. So the Oregon Department of Forestry made the request to Governor Kitzhaber at the time that he use the Conflagration Act to send resources to the structural resources to the Jetco River drainage to help those that volunteer fire department identify the structures in their district and plan. Unfortunately, the Conflagration Act didn't allow for that. The governor did it under a different designation. But this amendment to the Conflagration Act would allow the governor the kind of authority that he needs to send even a small group of firefighters to a fire situation before the fire is threatening structures, when that kind of action could prevent or reduce damage to structures from fire. I ask for your support for this bill. Ask Mr. Garrison to give some of his experiences that brought the need for this bill to you today.
Thank you. Chair Berger, members of the committee, State Fire Marshal referenced the event in Coos Bay, and that...
Identify yourself.
Oh, I'm sorry. For the record, I'm Robert Garrison, retired State Fire Marshal. At the time, I was State Fire Marshal. When we were notified those three firefighters had died in that fire, we immediately responded to assist the fire department. We knew that they would, that an event like that would just bring them to their knees. And indeed it did. When we got there later that evening, we found that local communities had responded to staff their stations, so they got some immediate relief. But as we began working to put together the memorial service to keep those stations staffed, we knew that the local communities around Coos Bay weren't going to be able to staff those stations long term. Day or so, maybe, but they have their own responsibilities to their own taxpayers. Immediately, the fire service stepped up and said, we will organize apparatus and train firefighters to come in and staff those stations. And we had people coming in from all over the state. In fact, organizing them became the challenge. We had a tremendous response. But we had to make the point with each of these fire chiefs, you're really outside your authority. When you do this, there's some liability associated with that. They agreed they were going to do it anyway, because that's how the fire service operates. There are other kinds of events that we can visualize that could take out a community's fire service capability, for instance. It may be something as, innocuous, not really innocuous, but a small scale. Many communities, there are about 360 or so fire departments in the state. Most of them are very small. Many of them have but one station. That station burns down, burns up the apparatus, that fire department's out of business. That community has no fire protection. This bill would allow the governor, even though there isn't a conflagration involved, would allow the governor, through the state fire marshal, to provide some assistance to that community so that they can continue fire protection until they can get back on their feet, if you will. Consider the tsunami event that we recently witnessed. Those coastal communities are at risk. Many of them, their fire stations are going to be gone, so is their apparatus. Their responders may be there, but they're not going to be able to provide any service. This would allow the governor the opportunity to mobilize the fire service, and the fire service will want to do this, to provide some immediate relief to that community until they can get their own fire protection up and running. So again, as State Fire Marshal has mentioned, this is something we've talked about for probably 3 years. It has the support of literally the entire fire service, as far as I know, and we would ask for your support on this bill as well.
You want to speak, gentlemen, then we'll...
Chair Berger, very briefly, everything that needs to be said about this bill has been said. This just closes the circle, making it... possible for firefighters to go in and assist where there is not a conflagration. It's a very, very big priority for the fire district directors and others, and I thank you.
Questions from the panel?
I'm good, thanks.
Representative Buckley?
Just a chain of command question on the good neighbor part of this. Worst case scenario, several disasters across the state, fire chief in a particular city having to choose where to send his resources if he's going to participate in assistance in one area or another. Is there a chain of command that exists? Is there a state level position that would advise or even direct a local fire chief to send resources?
Chair Berger, Representative Buckley, yes, there is. We have organized the state. This was happened many years ago. State Fire Marshal organized the state into fire defense districts, and each county has a fire defense district that's made up of the chiefs in that fire district and a representative of the state forester. They elect a chair, and each of those chairs sits on a state fire defense board. And that's the organization that plans the mobilizations, what requirements are needed for a firefighter to respond to a specific event, for example, training and equipment. When the governor needs resources to send to an emergency, we use that chain of command. The state fire marshal contacts the county fire defense board chiefs, who in some cases have pre-designated task forces for response to specific kinds of emergency. Some counties in Oregon generally do not have the resources to send to a conflagration. And sometimes it's because they're limited in their local staff. Sometimes it's because they have a fire or other emergency or high fire danger in their county and are reluctant to send resources, which is very understandable. So far, even during the very worst of the fire seasons, we haven't run out of responders. We were stretched pretty thin 1 year, but we at this point have never been unable to find task forces to respond.
Thank you.
Further questions? This struck me in this language, and I have to satisfy myself. It says, an organization that possesses only one self-propelled pumping unit is exempt. Are there fire departments that only have ones, and what in the world is sell, are they pushing it? What does that mean?
Chair Berger, this original language was established during World War II. It was identified originally for urban conflagrations that might be caused from firebombing on the coast during World War II. And I think at the time, probably there were some fire departments that had only one fire truck or engine run by a motorized engine. So it's old language. What is intended there and the way it's used is simply as I was responding to Representative Buckley's question, when a department simply doesn't have the resources to send, they're not sent. The department has a primary responsibility to their own taxpayers and to protect their community, and secondarily to respond elsewhere. I also wanted to address the fiscal impact on this for the record. As I explained before, when the governor sends resources under the Conflagration Act to conflagrations, there is reimbursement of the local departments and communities' expenses. We don't foresee for the kinds of administrative non-fire emergencies as we had in Coos Bay that the fire departments would request reimbursement. We simply need the legislation for them to cover their liability and scope of authority.
Thank you very much. Further questions? Thank you very much. I see no one else signed up to speak on this bill, and no one's jumping forward, so I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2155. And panel, we heard some bills last week. So I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2087, which, if you remind us.
Certainly. House Bill 2087 adds Oregon Department of Transportation to the list of agencies that can enter into leases of real property. Am I on the right bill? 2087, yeah.
2087.
For more than 5 years without approval by Oregon Department of Administrative Services. It provides for streamlining the process used for managing surplus and excess real property assets.
Okay, panel. No one wants to speak further on this. Any further questions on it? Representative Sumner?
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2087 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Sumner moves House Bill 2087 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any objections? So moved.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2087 be placed on the consent calendar.
Representative Sumner puts it on the consent calendar. Any objections? So moved. Closing public hearing on 2087. I'd like to open a public hearing on House Bill 2115. And I'd like to ask DAS Facilities person Bill Foster to come up with these here. Talk a minute on this.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Bill Foster. I'm the acting administrator of the Facilities Division of the Department of Administrative Services. And we've been having some discussions with the agency, both ODOT and Department of Justice, about the bill. And I think we have some concerns that there isn't the level of clarity in the current language. I think the underlying concept from our perspective is fine.
Okay. Is that the end of your remarks?
I can elaborate more if you would like.
No, that's fine. I just wanted to know you were at the end of your remarks. That gives me the opening to say, wish you were here a week ago when we heard the bill, and then ask the indulgence of the panel, or the committee, that I'm going to ask DAS and ODOT to go and resolve their differences, and we will bring this back at some soon time. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I'm closing public hearing on House Bill 2115 and opening a work session on House Bill 2173, which says, Kara?
House Bill 2173 streamlines the regulatory process by eliminating registration requirements that offer little benefit to Oregon workers and businesses. It requires the Department of Consumer and Business Services to adopt rules for use of digital signatures by state agencies. Adopted rules must protect the security, integrity, and confidentiality of state business transactions conducted by electronic commerce. Ensures that business conducted by e-commerce can be audited, and it also repeals the Registry of International Trade Consultants.
Hey. Any further comments or questions? Representative Esquivel?
Well, I would like to comment on one thing. This did strike me as being something that we could utilize elsewhere in the state, and I'm researching it now to see if we can take documentation on recordings through title companies with an encrypted code into county recorders with the same method, and therefore with a touch of a button you could record a document, and you wouldn't have to send someone down to the county to physically record it. So anyway, that's a different area. So anyway, Madam Chair, I move that House Bill 2183 on to the Committee of Trade and Economic Development with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Esquivel moves House Bill 2173 to the Committee on Trade and Economic Development with a due pass recommendation from this committee. Any objection? So moved. And close that public hearing or work session on 2173. And if there's nothing else for the good of order, I'm going to close today's House General Government Committee meeting. Adjourned. Excuse me. Adjourned. Linda, let me get the language right for you.
Thank you.
Thank you.